former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hope you didn't go to sleep at halftime last night. Heck of a game in the Western Conference Final. As we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM, I'm Stormy Bonantoni in for Michael Lombardi today, as he is every Wednesday. Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN host, senior NBA betting analyst, and the Lakers last night, JVT.
Yes.
A comeback that I thought maybe after they were down 21 in the third quarter, brought it all the way down to three still with just about over a minute left of the game, that maybe they could pull it off. But it gets cut short.
Yeah, it sounds like you and Stephanie and everybody else are like really disappointed about this. I was really surprised that everybody and their mothers.
It was just an exciting game.
You guys just really dislike Nikola Jokic, I suppose. And is that really what it is?
No, I am not one of those people that is not giving Jokic the respect that he deserves. An incredible performance from him. But did it not feel like for a moment that with the momentum that they were carrying in the quarter, they could have pulled it off?
Yes. And look, there's a reason why it happened too. Obviously, the Lakers shoot particularly well, but we always talk about adjustments. And I do like the conversations around games. I thought the Lakers actually stumbled into an adjustment as opposed to making one. So what happens in the fourth quarter is Rui Hachimura a couple times gets switched on to Nikola Jokic, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, hey, Anthony Davis can actually kind of roam and play like safety, essentially, come in and help and contest. And that started to clog up the paint a little bit. It started to congest the offense for the Nuggets, and it's a big reason why the Lakers were able to fight their way back into this. So I am, like, if you're going to tell me, hey, I don't think Denver can average 1.362 points per possession again or shoot 46% from three again. It's actually essentially 47% from three. I totally understand all of those points. But I am surprised that one of the narratives coming out of this, there's quite a few people who are like, Denver should treat this as a loss. They made adjustments. The Lakers have their number.
The Lakers figured something out in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's like, okay, that could be the case. Or, you know, we could look at the other side and say, do you think a team that shot 36% as a group at the end of the regular season, under 35% through the postseason so far, is going to shoot 46% on their own? I would say probably not. And I'd also take my chances with Nikola Jokic versus Rui Hachimura, because I think that Nikola Jokic is going to be able to figure some things out being the best offensive player in the NBA. So I would say, look, this is a big win, obviously, especially if you're going to blow as high as a 21-point lead against the Lakers and you still hold on to win it. But this is the best part about the postseason. The fourth quarter, Lakers moved the pawn piece. Now it's up to the Nuggets to move their own piece and see what they're going to do here as we head back for game two. But I wouldn't be surprised by the offensive output of the Nuggets. This is what this team is at this point, and I think this is what we should expect from them.
Well, and the game soared over the total. Hit it in the third quarter. 258 total points scored in this game. And so I was very curious what the adjustment was going to be when we saw game two. And I looked at DraftKings immediately, and you see 223, and you're like, okay, so not a very big adjustment. Wake up this morning, and it's sitting at 227.
Yep. Well, it should be. And here's the thing. This is the fascinating part about it is there was actually kind of a slow game. Only 96 possessions for the Lakers, 97 for the Denver Nuggets. So sub-100 possession game is a relatively slow game. It's not the slowest we've ever seen. But, keep in mind, 76ers and Nets averaged about 95, 94. So you're kind of right around there. It was just hyper-efficient offense. So I think that this is kind of telling us, look, the Nuggets should be able to have success. And going back to the conversation about, hey, Lakers have their number. This is one of the things I brought up with you before, Stormy. This was the best, and this still is, the best defense in the postseason. Right. Gave up an offensive rating of 130 last night. So you should have some concerns if you're the Lakers that maybe you're not going to be able to stop this offense. And I don't think you're going to be able to shoot like that. So I think there's concerns for both sides as we move forward. But we saw the strengths play out. The Lakers got to the free throw line with relative ease. Anthony Davis and LeBron James had double digits. They're also, I think, an angle to kind of move forward here when it comes to betting some of these player props. So LeBron James yesterday had 26 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, and near triple-double. They were mismatch hunting like crazy. Almost every single possession, they were involving Nikola Jokic in pick and rolls. They were going after Jamal Murray. Murray had to defend LeBron James way more than I think he really wanted to. And there were a couple of possessions, it's great, where you watch and, they have these things, some of the terminology is like calling scrams. So you're trying to look at Jamal Murray, and Jamal Murray's kind of looking at Aaron Gordon like, all right, come on, scram back and get back on him. And Gordon's like, nah, you're too far away, just guard him. And so that's going to happen. And if LeBron James is going to be forced to be a little bit more physical, post up, take advantage of some mismatches, especially against Jamal Murray, I think he's going to be a candidate to go over some of these point totals as we move forward, especially if these totals are going to start to grow in terms of the game.
And Jamal Murray, by the way, I feel like we should just target his overs when he's listed with an illness and questionable, right? On, because game six against the Suns, he was listed with an illness, had 26. Last night, illness and an ear infection, 31 points, 5 boards, and 5 assists. And Anthony Davis has a 40-point night, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, and it is severely overshadowed by the numbers that Jokic did put up, 34 points on 71% shooting, 21 boards, 14 assists, and he came out the gates like that. That first quarter was unbelievable. First player in postseason history now with back-to-back 30-point triple-doubles on 70% shooting. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and it's also, I think, one of the things for this series overall that we saw play out yesterday. One, Nikola Jokic is freaking awesome, and you think he's going to continue to be awesome. But the question of depth and how good this team is, and it's so funny, you know, it's a cliche, but it speaks so true of, like, role players playing well at home. Look at everybody else around Nikola Jokic. Yeah. Bruce Brown comes off the bench for 16-4-2. Michael Porter Jr. has 15-10-2, was really good from three-point range, 3-6. Had a ridiculous shot where, like, Austin Reeves' hand was, like, right here, and he still nails the three from the left corner. These role players played particularly well, so I think that's going to be something. You know, home court is going to matter here. And if these role players are going to continue to show out, as of course we know, Nuggets have home court, this is going to be an interesting series to move forward.
How many times did we see Anthony Davis or just anybody laughing when the Nuggets would just sink another shot in a tough situation? You're like, how are these guys
right
just continuously
break, right?
doing it?
Yes. Halftime where Jokic is just like, all right, screw it. Like, I just got to put this up, and it still goes in.
Jokic, I saw a tweet that had me cracking up. And I don't
Was it mine?
Yours was Austin Threaves was a pretty good one. Yeah. But this one is about Jokic, and it was something along the lines of how he looks like he is hungover and winded at a JV practice doing wind sprints, yet is the best player on the court every single night. And I felt like it was so accurate. I told you, I was like, it looks like he always has a cold or something. His nose is always red, but he's the best. And it is so fun and entertaining to watch. And I love that because of the way that he's performing on this level right now, it's kind of squashing some of the talk about him with the MVP conversation and how postseason shouldn't even play into it to begin with, but that he's doing what he's doing in the conference finals.
Yeah, so that's something I felt kind of passionate about, which was, so I'm not a fan. You know, we've gotten to know each other a little bit more over the last few years, the last few weeks and months. I'm not a fan of disingenuous conversations. And if we want to have conversations about things, if you disagree, if you think, you know, Jokic should not win MVP, that's a perfectly fine thought to have. Give me legitimate reasons why. And there was a lot of disingenuous conversations about Nikola Jokic as a player, for some reason about postseason success, how we as a collective decided to rule out the bubble run for all of these teams. Yet here we are, right? Final 14, same ones as the 2020 bubble. And disingenuously striking a line through Nikola Jokic's run to a Western Conference Finals that year when Joel Embiid cannot get out of the second round. And you see it. I mean, and Mitch Moss actually tweeted this out yesterday. I thought it was a really great point. Put Nikola Jokic on the Philadelphia 76ers in that series against Boston. What kind of a difference do you think that makes? I think that makes a massive difference. I think Boston ends up losing that series if Nikola Jokic is playing for Philadelphia in that series. So, other words, like, it's not an important conversation to have, but I think to your overall point, there's a lot of people that had this ridiculous line where they were like, can you imagine if we look back in 10 years from now and see that Nikola Jokic won 3 straight MVPs and it's really going to be an embarrassment? I think it's going to be an embarrassment when we look back 10 years from now and Jokic didn't win the MVP this year and that Embiid did.
Yeah, no, it's been phenomenal. And I like that we're having that conversation outwardly and that other people are starting to recognize and realize the talent that he truly is. Again, the update line for game two, the Nuggets, a 5.5-point favorite, total 226.5, 227. But the Nuggets were not the only winners last night. San Antonio Spurs, they win the ping pong ball battle for the opportunity to take the number one overall pick in the draft, which will, of course, be the French phenom, Victor Wembanyama. And you wrote it in the article that you had out today because you have a mock draft now post the draft lottery last night. And I love that there's no gallivanting around the idea that he's going to go anywhere else, that Brian Windhorst immediately in the interview with him live says, what are the Spurs getting in you?
Right. So, like, I think, look, we have, there was a sports gambling Twitter conversation the other day, again, about value. You can make the case that there is value in a minus 20,000 price tag on Victor Wembanyama to go first overall because of, just like you said, Tony Parker has already tweeted out, Spurs, get Wembanyama. The fact that the person who interviews Wembanyama slugs the question like that, not like, hey, what would the Spurs get if they drafted you? No, it's what are the San Antonio Spurs getting? It is an understood thing. Wembanyama is going to be drafted first overall. And I keep making the joke, Stormy, if he was abducted by aliens tomorrow, the Spurs would still draft him for his rights just in case the aliens decided to return him in a few months or even a year. He's going to be the number one overall pick. And so you could look at minus 20,000. Look, I'm not saying go out and lay it, but that is almost a – I wouldn't even say almost. It is a assured thing is 100% going to happen, and you still have odds, and that is for a reason. But, yes, Victor Wembanyama is going to be the first overall pick. There is no need to think about it.
19 years old, drawing comparisons on defense to Kevin Garnett, on offense to Kevin Durant, but he's 7'5" with an 8-foot wingspan. So the hype is yes. high, to say the least. Like, how does anybody live up to expectations like this?
It's hard. I mean, LeBron did it, but LeBron's, of course, arguably the best player that we've seen in basketball. And I'd say, too, I mean, look at, so you, like, you talk about the comparisons to Kevin Durant. You know, a lot of people see a tall, slender guy who can shoot. He shot under 30% each of the last two seasons in his pro league out there in France. So there is some things to work on with Victor Wembanyama in terms of his game. However, in the NBA, it's all about projecting. And you can fix jump shots. You can, you know, do little things. And so if you look at what Victor Wembanyama projects to be, that's where teams start salivating. They're like, we can make that into something great. He's already pretty great. Mm-hmm. And even as a long kid, like as a really tall player like that, just by extension, because of your body, you're going to be a good rim protector because you can contest a lot of shots that a lot of people can't. So it's going to be awesome. But of course, narratively, it plays out just perfectly for the San Antonio Spurs to get him.
Yeah, it's the first time the Spurs have picked in the top four since Tim Duncan, number one in 97. In fact, the Spurs historically have two of the three largest turnarounds in league history after getting the top pick in 97. Their win total increased by 36 wins, went to the conference semis, and Duncan won Rookie of the Year. And David Robinson in the late 80s also won Rookie of the Year his season, increased their win total by 35 and had a conference semis appearance. So what is the ceiling for the San Antonio Spurs next season? We can discuss that a little bit, as well as the mock draft breakdown that you have. Who will go number two and three? Charlotte Hornets with the number two pick. Is it Scooter Henderson? Is it Brandon Miller? We'll break that down, as well as the big game coming up with the Celtics and Heat in the Eastern Conference.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID, open up an account, and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Back here on the Lombardi Line, we were talking about the draft lottery came through last night. Victor Wembanyama expected to go to the San Antonio Spurs, number one overall, when the draft does come around. And JVT, you have a full mock draft already locked and loaded, ready to go on BSN.com.
Don't oversell it. It is a mock draft of the lottery, so it's not all 30 picks yet. 1 through 14. Yes, you even threw me off. So 1 through 14. Because, like, I think I'm going to do a full mock draft at some point, but because the markets are so limited right now, we only have picks for picks 1 through 5. So there's not really a ton of value going through a top 30, but we do have a mock draft of the full lottery up there. And I think it's obviously the top five that's very interesting. And after that, there's a lot of noise with some of these players because, you know, drafting in the NBA, I think, is a lot different than drafting in, like, the NFL, for example. If I'm an NFL team, I have needs at edge. I have needs at offensive line. And how I evaluate those certain players might change. So I might, you know, go with a different player in those position groups, but you kind of know the position groups that a team's going to target. In the NBA, it's based a lot, because these kids are so young, on upside, about projecting. You might draft at a position that you don't necessarily need because you think that the future of his kid is going to be pretty intriguing. So with that being said, the intrigue does start with number two, because we do have Scoot Henderson, who plays out here at G League Ignite. Ben Wilson, by the way, is going to be on the podcast today, the play-by-play voice for the G League Ignite. Got to watch Scoot Henderson up close all season long. And I think a lot of people expect Scoot Henderson to be the second guy. In fact, he's minus 175 to go number two. However, I think there's a pretty good long shot thing to work here, and you see the odds for the second overall pick. First is Brandon Miller out of Alabama at even money, or plus 100. Can't emphasize that enough. there is a growing sense that Miller is starting to become the viewed as the second best prospect here. And now people might say Miller has legal issues. Jonathan Givony reported at the beginning of March that those legal issues are actually starting to clear up, that his role in that unfortunate incident actually might have been a little bit less than what was previously reported. And so if that is the case, then Miller's going to start to rise because he is an awesome off-ball player, a wing, a 3 and D specialist, and those are very valuable in today's NBA.
And we even heard Adrian Wojnarowski yesterday on that draft special talking about how he very much so felt that when talking to teams, they feel his maturity is one of his assets, and something that had been doubted based on the situation that we had seen previously is actually something that they think very highly of with Brandon Miller.
Right. So I think that's going to be something where we're going to watch. Scoot Henderson right now is the odds-on favorite. And you even show the odds right there. Yesterday, Stormy, immediately after the NBA draft lottery, Scoot Henderson was minus 175. So you're starting to see Miller already creep here in the hours since the NBA draft lottery. But if we go back to my mock draft, one of the things that I think might stand out to some people is I don't even have Scoot Henderson going third. I have him going fourth. And this is the interesting part, again, going back to what we talked about with the NBA draft, is do you draft for need or do you draft for projection? Amen Thompson is going to be a kid that I think fits much better with Portland. Think about the backcourt assets that Portland already has. They have Damian Lillard. They spent a high pick on Shaedon Sharpe. They have Anfernee Simons, who they really like. Would it make a lot of sense for Portland at number three then to add a ball-dominant point guard in Scoot Henderson to that mix? I don't think it really does. So are you drafting for need or are you drafting for maximizing the roster that is around Damian Lillard because he doesn't want to go? And if that's going to be the case, I think Thompson makes a lot more sense at number three than Scoot Henderson does. And then you get to number four, Scoot Henderson going to the Houston Rockets. First off, you could find that at 36-1 to go fourth overall. And I did bet that because I think that's something worth taking here. And it's also a pick that makes a lot more sense on its surface. Kevin Porter Jr. is the starting point guard for the Houston Rockets. They did just sign him to a 4-year extension. However, Kevin Porter Jr. has kind of been a knucklehead off the court. His contract is not guaranteed after this year. The Rockets can cut bait whenever they want with Kevin Porter Jr., and they have Jalen Green already. Scoot Henderson would fit wonderfully next to Jalen Green. And if this were to happen, and if Scoot Henderson's going to fall, it would make a ton of sense to look at Henderson at that fourth spot if you're the Houston Rockets. So that's how I have the top four breaking out, and I'll give our guy Zach Cohen a lot of credit too because he has this write-up up on the website as well. It's linked in the mock draft if you go to it. He wrote about the second pick and what it means. Look out for Orlando. Orlando is an interesting team because they have two first-round picks. They have a desperate need at point guard as well. They could trade up to number two with Charlotte or even number three to grab Scoot Henderson. And once those markets start to come out, specific players to specific teams, playing Orlando to get Scoot Henderson would be a pretty good plus price, and that might be something to look at.
Feel for the Pistons, finished with the worst record in the NBA this season. 5 straight seasons now that the team with the worst record.
You talk about
does
funny
not
tweets.
Get that top pick.
Somebody tweeted out, like, I watched them win 17 games for the 5th overall pick. Can you imagine?
Oh, feel for Charlotte as well, by the way, because this is the 4th time the Hornets have had the number 2 overall pick, and each of the previous 3 times an absolute superstar went 1. Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, and Shaq. The previous 3 times. We do have a huge game coming up tonight. The Miami Heat at the NBA title favorite Boston Celtics. Celtics an 8-point favorite, total around 210.5. Heat on the money line tonight, 3-1. Mm. And the Celtics an even bigger favorite in this series, over $5. The expectation largely that, hey, this is a Celtics team that clearly has the better lineup on paper, clearly should win this set. Now the question is, by how many, I guess, in a lot of people's minds, but do you think the Heat could be live, or how many games do you think the Heat could get?
So in talking to a lot of people, I feel somewhat on an island with my take, and Kelly Bidlin is on this island with me, I know that, and so I'm ready to be wrong. I think the Celtics are going to clean this thing up pretty quickly. I think that when you look at all of the matchups that go in favor of the Boston Celtics in this series, they are by far the better shooting team. We can talk, a lot of people push back and say, well, the Heat were one of the best, actually the best three-point shooting team last year, and they shot a little better in the second half. They weren't this year. They were in the mid-20s to bottom 20s in three-point shooting. Their shooting was great against the Milwaukee Bucks, 47% from three, 50% on contested three-point shots that completely disappeared against the New York Knicks. Jimmy Butler, since twisting his ankle in game 1 against the New York Knicks, Stormy, has shot 42% from the floor. Don't know how healthy that Jimmy Butler is. And just look at the changes in the lineup here. Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Kevin Love, some weaker defenders that the Boston Celtics, who mismatch on a ton, are going to be more than willing to go after, I think, on a nightly basis. I think there's so many different things that work in the Celtics' favor. And for me, one of the bigger changes, too, is the lineup change. Going back to the starting five that got you to the NBA Finals, having Robert Williams at center, now as a help defender roaming around, kind of like what we're talking about with Anthony Davis, the adjustment of putting Rui Hachimura and allowing Davis to kind of play center, or excuse me, safety, and roam and hunt and do all sorts of stuff in terms of shot contests. Robert Williams does it better than anybody else. You have a lot of different lineup combinations that you can use. And a big difference, too, is this Boston bench. Malcolm Brogdon was not part of that bench last year. Obviously, now he is. They're deeper. There's a lot of different things that work in favor of the Boston Celtics. And I meant it wholeheartedly when I tweeted it out the other day. I thought this was going to be minus 750 in favor of the Boston Celtics. Not minus $6, not minus 525. So I did lay 2.5 games at plus 129, I think it was, here at Circa. 128, one of those two. Maybe a cent or two off from what I'm talking about. And I think that the Celtics have the weapons to end this thing quickly. And if they don't, it would be a disappointment for them.
Well, and I think that's kind of where my thought process comes into this, is that a lot of their performances in the previous series have been largely disappointing. They've been so inconsistent.
Yep.
And the Heat, meanwhile, I feel like we're blowing them off and not giving them enough credit for how they have changed and how they've improved here in the postseason.
So I think that's fair. But I also wonder, we like to give certain credit for certain things, but also glance over things. So we're going to talk about the Celtics, you know, as Doc Rivers said, playing with their meat. The 76ers were the 3 seed. It's not like the 76ers were the 7th seed coming in and scrapping with them. They have Joel Embiid, the MVP, and James Harden. I get that we maybe don't respect the 76ers now that they have lost, but that was the 3 seed, and a very good 3 seed at that, that they beat. The Atlanta Hawks, you want to say that they let them hang around? Okay, sure. Do we discount the Miami Heat? I guess we count the Knicks win as a really big one for Miami, but I don't power rate the Knicks that highly. And I'm such a proponent of styles making fights in the NBA, and that if you match up well with an opponent, you're going to win in that matchup, then you're going to win in that series. The Knicks matched up well with the Cavs. They won, they moved on. The Heat matched up well with the Knicks. They won, they moved on. I think that we have to view these series in kind of a little bit of a vacuum, as opposed to, hey, you know, Heat were the 8 seed. Let's move them on. They were great. They were fantastic. And that's just not really, I just don't believe that's the case. They deserve to be upgraded, and the market has. But I just think that maybe we're kind of ignoring the clear and obvious flaws with the Miami Heat because they beat the Milwaukee Bucks, and not realizing that the Knicks were a pretty flawed team that they beat in the next round as well.
So obviously you think Boston's going to take game one tonight. What about that number?
I think it's right on. I mean, I think when you're talking about the projected series price, for me, as somebody who thought it was going to be just over $7, you can make the case that this should probably be closer to just over 9 in terms of a point spread. So if you want to go in and lay it. But as we were talking about off the air, and by the way, the market might be moving in that direction. There's 8.5s everywhere. DraftKings is shaded to the 8 side at minus 115. But when you're talking about where this might end up, as we spoke, I mean, they miss a couple of shots, you get a couple of empty possessions. You can get 6.5 probably in 2 seconds in this game. So might be worth it to look at from an in-game standpoint.
Yeah, live betting has been far more fruitful for me in the NBA postseason than any of these pre-flop numbers. And we'll get some opinions on this game as well a little bit later on this hour. VSiN's own Danielle Alvari will join us. There's also been big news in the WNBA. She will give us the full breakdown there. And then in hour two, Harry Gagnon, former Vegas sportsbook supervisor and podcast host now, will give some of his plays out. But when we come back, we're turning our attention to the NFL. When Joe Burrow speaks, we often tend to listen, breaking down some of his comments about his impending contract extension and more coming up next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
So much to bet on over the next 30 days, and for a limited time, you can become a subscriber. Come join us. VSiN, just $9.99. That'll get you insight into daily baseball best bets and the NBA and NHL postseason. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to the daily recap of all of the top plays made by every VSiN show host and guest. You also get tools like our betting splits to let you see where the money and bets are moving for each game, as well as a top VSiN experts leaderboard where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Sign up now for just $9.99. VSiN.com/subscribe. This is the Lombardi Line, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. In for Michael Lombardi, we got our guy JVT on the desk today. And a few NFL headlines coming through over the last 24 hours. Joe Burrow spoke yesterday for the first time since last season ended. He, of course, was asked about his forthcoming contract extension, said he's involved and that it's in the works, but would prefer to keep things out of the media. Did add, quote, he's pretty clear on what he wants in the contract and what he thinks is best for himself and the team. So they're on the road to making that happen. He has 2 years left on his contract this season, the last year of his rookie deal, plus the fifth year option, $29.5 million. Guaranteed in 2024. How much urgency should there be to get this thing done?
Give him your unborn children. Who right? cares? Like, get it done. He's one of the best young quarterbacks in the National Football League. His PFF passing grades have been among the best each of the last two seasons. Obviously, we know about the postseason success at this point right now. I give him whatever he wants. Give him whatever he wants. Like, I think that's really simple. So this should probably get done pretty quick.
Well, so Jalen Hurts gets his deal done. Yeah. Of course, Lamar Jackson does. So you kind of have a good feel for what the market should be right now. But then you also have the flip side of it with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who does the long-term deal, more team-friendly. Do you have, like, a thought process of... What do you know about Joe Burrow? What are we going to see?
I would say that if he's smart, he's looking at all those quarterbacks and saying, give me more because I'm better than them. Maybe outside of Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be, and this is the way it works too. You're always going to be, if you're up for a good contract because of a good year, more than likely you're always going to be the highest paid at your position once you sign that deal because that's just the way the market works. So Burrow is deserving of it. I'd be interested. I mean, I haven't seen anything. I do wonder if it's going to be... I wonder if you're going to get close to like Deshaun Watson in terms of guaranteed money and how much this is going to be guaranteed for him, just given the fact that he does deserve, if you're going to give out one of those fully guaranteed deals, Joe Burrow is the guy to give it to. So I wonder what that's going to be like in terms of construction, but he's going to be the highest paid quarterback once this is all said and done. And then Mahomes will probably follow. And I think that's how it's going to work. Should.
Yeah. Those are the comps that you're looking at. Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, of course, Kyler, and Josh Allen and Dak Prescott, those can help provide context as well, but he's going to be the highest paid guy, no question. The only reason that I was trying to feel out the like term and length of the deal is because you do have guys like T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, other players who are going to be up for free agency here relatively soon, and you want to be able to keep the band together, so to speak, to keep that run going. Back-to-back AFC championship appearances, a Super Bowl appearance.
That's the curse of having a quarterback, right? This is what's going to happen at some point, and I think there's a pretty clear pecking order there. Jamar Chase is going to be the number one option after you get Joe Burrow done and everything else. I think you're going to convince yourself as a team that even though it's recent, Stormy, they do have a pretty good track record of finding and developing receivers. There's a reason why the receiving core is so deep because they have drafted them, they have scouted them, and they have seen that these are the guys that we want. And at the very end of it, guys like Higgins might be left on the cutting room floor only because you only have so much money to go around. It's not anything against him. It's just that we want to pay Burrow, we want to pay Chase, and that's going to be it. So I think that's maybe this thing just works out. But I would always say this. I say it about the NBA all the time. These guys know the salary cap backwards, forwards, left, right, every single direction. If they want to keep it together, they will find a way to keep it together.
Fifth on the board to win the Super Bowl this year, sitting 12-1. Their season win total, 11.5. When you look at their schedule, anything that stands out to you in terms of that win total?
Yeah, nothing really intense. I do think when you're talking about the front end of the schedule, there's some intriguing teams that we just don't know what they're going to be. You know, I've made the case. I think the fly in the ointment in the AFC North is going to be the Cleveland Browns. What if Deshaun Watson becomes Deshaun Watson of the Texans past? Then all of a sudden, you're looking at a team that could be very, very deadly on offense with a lot of talent on defense. Same thing with the Los Angeles Rams. Are the Rams going to be more like the team they were last year, an offensive line that couldn't pass protect and an offense that was stuck in the mud? Or are they going to start to look a little bit more like the team that won the Super Bowl and have a little bit more continuity on offense? Because if that's going to be the case, all of a sudden the first three games of your schedule become a little bit more challenging. And then after that, you get a little bit of a lighten up there. But I think that's the intriguing part for me. It's what the Cleveland Browns are and what they're going to be in that very first matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals, because I think they're a little bit of an unknown.
Well, and also just looking at the odds to win the Super Bowl, BetMGM, their odds are even shorter than elsewhere that I've seen, sitting 9-1. So getting some play, it seems. But a team that... last 2 years, you said it, he's led them almost as far as you can go. Yep. Last year, and then as far as you could go the year prior. So they're a team that, for good reason, people like and are interested in betting on. Yep. A team that some people might have some questions about this year, however, the Las Vegas Raiders and their star wide receiver, Davante Adams, did an interview with The Ringer's Myron Fader recently, and a lot of the headlines coming out haven't been particularly glowing about his feeling for the team and some of their decisions, which... I mean, is going to be expected to an extent, given that you came all the way to Vegas to play with your best friend and then you trade him the next season. But some of the quotes making the rounds we being Devontae in the front office, don't see eye to eye on what we think is best for us right now. Adam says he has some reservations on the Raiders' offensive plans, says he's going to have to buy into this and try to be as optimistic as possible. Like, what does that mean? Especially at this point, we're in May.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I can only think about what I know or think, and it's just that I kind of agree. It depends on what he wants. I guess he's probably unhappy that Derek Carr is gone. But at the same time, I think that this is a franchise that's kind of spinning its wheels. You don't want to be stuck in purgatory if you're a team in the National Football League, and that's what the Raiders are. They're going to be in that 7-9 win range, and I think 9 is putting it very positively for them. And you have a quarterback that has missed quite a bit of time over the last few years in terms of injury that might maximize your wide receivers, as he put it there. But I just don't see what the Raiders are going to be as we move forward into this season. Do you realistically have Super Bowl aspirations? And as you put it, for a guy who came over to play with his friend in Derek Carr as part of a really good offense, or what he thought was going to be a really good offense, and compete in a division that he thought he was going to be competitive in, you're looking around and saying, well, I think we're pretty clearly the fourth best team in this division right now, and you don't know what the upside is going to be. And even talking about the future, Aiden O'Connell's the future? Even if you're Devontae Adams, you're kind of saying, like, I don't even have a young quarterback to kind of look forward to that's behind Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah. Why am I really buying into what this overall plan is going to be on offense? Maybe it's a scheme thing that he doesn't see eye to eye with, and he just doesn't want to put word to that because they're trying to work out some X's and O's stuff. But I think situationally, if you're Devontae Adams, who's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and you would assume has aspirations to win a championship, can't feel very confident in your situation.
Yeah, and at 30 years old, you're just getting older as well. Also, ship
That's
out Darren
works.
Waller. Yeah, yes. Father Time, undefeated, as they say. But one of the other comments he said was, it all depends on the style of ball that we play. If we play a certain brand, I can get Jimmy G to conform to whatever. But if we use him a certain type of way, then it's going to make it tough for us to maximize who we should be this year. Mm-hmm. And my head instantly, I was just like, yeah, Jimmy, it's just like San Francisco. Just get it to me and everything will be okay. Get the ball out to your weapons. But like, does that to me, like saying Josh McDaniels, you're not taking any shots. It's only May and we're just talking about game planning stuff and you want to just get the first down, just get the first down. That's kind of the way I read into that.
Yeah, because, I mean, does he want more in terms of pass attempts and maybe less leaning on the run game? Because, like, they were fine in terms of attempts last year. They were 21st in rushing attempts in terms of percentage of rushing plays a season ago, too. They think they were, we'll double check, they were, like, in the top half. Actually, they were barely in the top half. They were at 19th, so it's not like they were overly reliant on the run game. I unless you know the intricacies of their offense, you probably can't tell really what the problem is. But clearly, if you're speaking this vocally about it and to the media, and especially when you're kind of like Patriots West, where generally those things kind of stay in-house, it is pretty interesting to see that one of your best players is giving voice to him being unhappy with this, whatever it is.
I wonder what, when this article came out, what Josh McDaniels, what Ziegler, like what these guys are thinking that their most notable name on their team right now, essentially, is saying these things.
If we're reading into it, I would say that it's not something he hasn't told them and they're just not listening. Huh? And maybe you're probably doing some self-reflecting as to maybe we should start to listen to this.
He made me laugh with his I'm him moment, saying you can scratch out all the stats of my career and just write, I didn't need Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, it's kind of true. It took a while, but he did break out from that New Orleans Saints game on. He was pretty sick, and he was pretty good the entire year, and I think kind of held back by his quarterback last year. So,
but no, I mean, he and Aaron were for a long time considered a duo, considered as one, and so he had the opportunity to go out and do his thing, and we'll see how they build on that this year. Last year, 6-11 season win total coming into 2023-24, 7.5. You said it. They're the long shot in the division. For a reason, it looks like it's going to be an uphill battle again in the AFC West. The Broncos should be better. The Chargers should be better. And we already know who's at the top of the mountain in the defending Super Bowl champions.
You hit on I think, the biggest problem for them. I think the Broncos are going to be much closer to what everybody expected them to be last year, now that Sean Payton's in there. And that just makes things a whole lot worse if you're the Las Vegas Raiders. If the Broncos actually start to reach their potential. Listen,
like you mentioned, a wild card in the AFC being the Browns. I mean, that's another very clear one as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So we got to step aside. When we come back, we will have our girl Danielle Alvari on the program, get her opinion on the game coming up tonight in the NBA, as well as the WNBA season tipping off this Friday, her preview of the season to come.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Use a BetMGM bonus bet to place your next wager on any game in any sport. To receive this bonus bet, all you got to do, log into your BetMGM account every Saturday and Wednesday between May 13th and June 7th to bet on any game of your choice. Then add any type of bet on any game to your bet slip and activate that bonus bet. There's no deposit or additional wager required. This bonus bet is on the house. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Promotional offer may differ per customer. 21 and up to wager. BetMGM.com for T's and C's. Promotional offers not available in Nevada, New York, Ontario, and Washington, D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call HOPE 877-8NY or text HOPE NY in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, and 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Missouri, in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. This is the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back to the program live from Las Vegas. Talked plenty of NBA early on to start the show, and rightfully so, with the Eastern and Western Conference Finals in full swing. Got Game 1 in the East coming up tonight, and the WNBA regular season is tipping off this Friday. So to help us break it all down, we bring in our own Danielle Alvari, VSiN contributor, also a member of the DraftKings Starting Five, at Danielle Alvari on Twitter. What's going on, my friend? How are you today?
Doing well. I definitely feel like we're in the first week of WNBA because it has been all WNBA prep all week long. We just released a video on the Bet the W account with 10 different experts talking about all of their predictions for the W season. So I'm ready for whatever you got. What questions do you have for me, Stormy?
Ooh. Whoa, ho, coming in.
My first question, is your friend outside your window again today?
He is not. He's talking about the leaf blower, who's been just bane of my existence this week. Okay. There's not enough leaves for this. I told JVT we're not even in fall yet. There's no excuse for this.
That's the one work from home trial, right? There's nothing you can do about neighbors or wind blowers or all these things. But where I want to start with you, Danielle, is the big news coming out over the last 24 hours with the defending WNBA champs, the Las Vegas Aces. While they, this offseason, made a great addition in Candace Parker, now they find out the bad news that their head coach, coach of the year last year in Becky Hammon, is going to miss the first two games of the season, and they're going to miss out on their first round pick in 2025. What can you tell us about the situation that unfolded and also what the impact that might be to not have Coach Hammon there for the first couple games?
Well, the good news is if you did bet an over on the Aces win total, which was mighty high at 30.5, you think you're pretty safe as far as these affecting that win total. I don't think these two games are going to cause a huge impact, mostly because it's a top-down organization where when Becky's not around, they know how to act, right? Asia Wilson's an MVP. Candace Parker's an MVP. They know how to perform without her, especially for such a short suspension two game. And a lot of people also pointed out that taking away a first-round pick in a league where first-round picks get cast off like they're nothing because these rosters are so small, there's not league expansion. We have so many players who are really talented who are just not on rosters. Slapping them on the wrist sort of with this one first round pick suspension that really doesn't even affect them until 2 years from now because they didn't have a 2024 first round pick. So maybe a light slap on the wrist, but maybe also a nod to the fact that this wasn't as bad as we thought. But, the league punished Becky Hammon for whatever comments she did make to Dearica Hamby. Dearica Hamby originally, when she posted about this, didn't call out anybody in particular. So the league, the Aces organization at least, has stood behind Becky. So moving forward, I think this is going to be just a little bump in the road.
Well, it's also the opponents, right? By your own rankings, when we were talking about this, what, Storm are the 10th best team, and I think they have the Sparks, which are your 11th best team in the WNBA. So you get suspended the first two games, but isn't it against lesser competition too? So it's not really going to matter.
Yeah, it something to consider. But I mean, again, the Aces facing the Sparks will be entirely interesting because that is the team that Dearica Hamby ended up on. So if there are any props available, perhaps it's a Dearica Hamby revenge game.
By the way, I bring that up on purpose because if you go to VSiN.com/WNBA, you can find Danielle Alvari's power ratings into the WNBA regular season. How about that?
There we go. The Aces are +120 favorites to repeat. Last year's title matchup was Aces Sun, the Sun, a 40-1 shot by comparison. Liberty +130, budding superstar team led by Sabrina Ionescu. It really seems like the two of them and then the rest in the WNBA. How do you view it?
Yeah, I would say that the top three or four are pretty set. You mentioned the Connecticut Sun. I'd put them at four and the Mystics at three. And then, you, of course, you have the Aces and the Liberty, where really it's hilarious that people have described the Mystics as a sleeper team because they're third in the odds at 13-1 here. And also, the only reason they're 13-1 that I can tell is because they only have one MVP. And the Aces and the Liberty both have two MVPs on their team. So how do you compete with that? And then from there, it drops down to the Mercury, who also have Brittany Griner. So there's this talent kind of discrepancy as you go down through this list. But the Connecticut Sun, I think, are a little bit too long of a shot here at 40-1. In fact, on the show that I collected everybody's favorite predictions for the season, by far the most popular one for all of our experts was over 20.5 or over 21.5 or even up to 22.5, because there was a couple options, but over their win total, because people really back this team. They think that this is one of the most cohesive teams left in the league. A lot of veterans. Now, with that comes, is there going to be injury concerns? Of course, we're just assuming health here. But they also added some scoring with Rebecca Allen and Tiffany Hayes. The biggest news, obviously, is losing Jonquil Jones to the New York Liberty, who's their MVP, and then also their head coach, Kurt Miller, to the Sparks. And now bringing in a sort of unproven coach here in Stephanie White, and we're not sure what to expect there. That's the biggest question mark. But as far as the roster, this is a solid team and perhaps a little bit undervalued in the market.
Danielle, was it the Sun or the Mercury that you were telling me that the prop at 25 or more wins was worth playing?
Sun. Sun, it's at plus 550. So I believe FanDuel has this prop up where you can bet any of the teams. I believe Mystics are longer, of course, not the Aces or the Liberty, but Mystics are longer to win 25 or more games this season. And the Sun to win 25 or more games is plus 550. So if you're going to bet over 22.5, 23 wins, you tag two more on and you get value at plus 550. So I thought that was worth it if you're high on the Sun.
Here with VSiN's own Danielle Alvari, also member of the DraftKings starting five. And while the WNBA's audience, Danielle, is obviously growing so much, it's still considered a niche sport in a lot of ways. So does that give bettors a little bit more opportunity, maybe, with bookmakers paying more attention to the NBA and other sports going on?
Absolutely. I'm glad you pointed that out, because it's more about the bookmakers not necessarily being the sharpest on their side of things, because there are definitely very sharp bettors who bet the WNBA, which is something to keep in mind. As we know, in the NFL, closing line value can be so valuable. That can be the case in the WNBA as well, because again, sharp bettors will swoop in and move these lines so, so much. But I've managed to find success without always getting closing line value in the W. And again, live betting, very great option, I think, in basketball across the spectrum of any of the basketball that you can bet on, but especially the WNBA. So yes, I think there's edges to be had here, because again, they're not paying as close of attention as they are to the NFL, to the NBA. So something to think about if you're looking to bet the WNBA.
Let's go to the bottom. Fever 100-1, as you've slugged them, the baby Fever. What is the betting angle on Indiana? I know that you and I were discussing the other day in terms of third quarter, second halves, and what you just think of the Fever in general.
Yeah, the Fever are a really tough team. They were dead last year in both offensive and defensive rating. They've been dead last in the league 2 years in a row. They won five games last year. Their win total, seen a 7.5 out there, but also up to 10.5. I don't think they get to 11 wins. So under 10.5 on their win total is where I would go with that. They were 13-22 against the spread last year, the worst team against the spread. But we talked about live betting them, as you mentioned, more of a second half team. They did not give up. This team has fight. You have to give that to them. They're kind of the little bulldog of the league. And they're really tough to bet against, especially in a live situation, because they will come back. So there were situations where you would get 17.5, 15 points on this team, and they would rally back. They would still lose games and not cover the original pregame spread, but that was kind of the best way to bet them, was second half, and then also expect a fourth quarter collapse. Now, maybe that changes this year, because they brought in Aaliyah Boston, first overall pick from South Carolina. She's expected to be just WNB ready, can fit right in, and is going to bring a lot of defense for them, but it's not like she generates a lot of shots off a bounce or anything like that, so I think their offense is still going to be coming along. Melissa Smith is returning as well from injury. That was huge on the offense aside for them. They lost them midseason. They actually were doing okay heading into the season and then had these injuries. So I expect that they'll take a step forward this year. I don't think it's going to be 11 wins, even with the four additional games on the schedule this year.
I haven't seen odds out yet on the four games coming up on the Friday slate. So I'll ask you about the game we have tonight in the NBA, because I know you're very dialed into these games as well. Heat Celtics going head to head. Celtics 8.5 point favorite. Is there anything that you were intrigued by tonight?
I like taking the Heat plus 8.5. It sounds like too much to me. And also looking at some of Bam Adebayo's props earlier, and I don't hate his points, rebounds, and assists over 29.5. I'm seeing that at minus 120 right now. But I think that with all the focus going to be on Jimmy Butler, people have been quietly maybe not paying attention to all of the work that Bam's been contributing as well.
Danielle, you're awesome. Appreciate your time. And I love all of the color coordination with you today in the blue. It looks delightful.
Thanks so much, guys.
at Danielle Alvari on Twitter. Make sure you give her a follow. It was so good because she had the palm.
I don't appreciate you putting me on the spot there. What if I didn't agree?
Well, you're wearing blue, too. You kind of are color coordinated to an extent.
I mean, the blue and the black, yeah.
Does blue and black go together? I always wonder that.
I mean, I think, right?
I think it looks nice. I do it all the time, but yeah. I don't know if it's frowned upon by the establishment. Whoa.
I look like the Patriots? Is that what you just said?
No. Oh, I wish you guys could hear what we just heard in our ears
right
now.
Been razzing stuff all day.
We have to take a commercial break, but we will be back with hour two on the Lombardi Line. Turn it back to the NFL.